Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thank you, Don. This is John Williams. It's 10:14. We're in the Allstate Skyline studio. That snow might be the biggest snow St. Louis has ever had. It's worse in the south. About half of the 13 inches they could have gotten St. Louis, I'm not exactly sure what their final total is, about half of that they were expecting in Peoria and central Illinois, and then about half of that again here. And when you get up to Wisconsin, not nearly as much at all. Kind of the opposite the way you expect these things to go, but if you want some snow, you finally have got it. I'm glad that you did the story about the R. Kelly spring break jam in Springfield that is not going to happen. Who in their right mind thought a R. Kelly hosted music fest in Springfield was a good idea?
I do not know, man.
Well, I just say the tides turn fast on these things, and right now, but R. Kelly, the allegations have been out for so long.
And 2002,
he's not gone to jail. All of the things you've heard about, he's not been convicted of.
But up until so recently, everyone would have killed to work with R. Kelly. And the allegations have always been there, so it's easy to, and you're not wrong to ask the question, who thought this was a good idea? But the truth is, many, many people. And
Lady Gaga, Chance the Rapper, you're talking about those
kind of people? Yeah, sure, yeah. Or, I mean, pick somebody who's had a top 40 hit in the past 15 years. So many people have worked with R. Kelly, Kanye West.
That's the thing. So the man's very talented. There's a movement now to mute R. Kelly. Like, literally, is it wrong to listen to R. Kelly music? I think you could have a question about downloading or paying for his music if you don't want to reward him.
Mm-hmm.
I get that. But there's some people that don't even want you to listen to the music right now. You know, when Kevin Spacey when a celebrity does something wrong and terrible, it's a very interesting conversation to me about what your obligation is as a consumer of their craft.
I think right now, especially when the future of R. Kelly and the music industry is still up in the air, it does seem like he's on his way down, but we don't know. And I think now would be a weird time to be supporting him by listening to him. And I would be uncomfortable. It comes back with the song Ignition Remix all the time, which is probably his biggest hit. And it's been a staple at parties and weddings for as long as it's been out, basically.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Or at least the last 10 years. And it's very catchy and extremely popular, and it still comes on at parties. And I think now it's like half the room doesn't care and half the room feels, it's hard just not to feel weird.
So what do you do? Say, hey, wait a minute. That's an R. Kelly song. We can't be listening
stop
to that.
Stop dancing. Everyone stop dancing.
Honestly, yeah, I think there's a reason to say that. And just like, or at least,
but you know, but that,
not dance to it yourself.
I guess, but you know, right. Fair enough, Griff. Do what you want to do. But I don't know that dancing to, listening to, or my goodness, enjoying the music. I don't know anything about R. Kelly. I'm just talking about this in very general
terms.
Well,
we do, though. We know a lot about R. Kelly.
But I don't think that is an endorsement of what he's done wrong. It's saying my ears like this music that I'm hearing.
Yeah, that's a great point, John. I think there are several examples over the years of separating the artist from the person or the, you know,
We do this for Hollywood stars
all the time.
You can do this with sports, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe we shouldn't. And it's easier to do when that person lived and maybe died a long time ago. Like, artists that we know did bad things, but they're no longer benefiting from us enjoying their work. I don't think that you can say, I'm listening to it, but I don't support him. I think in the act of listening, that is a form of support, even no matter how minuscule.
I don't even know how is that supporting him? What is your definition of supporting him? If I didn't
enjoy, like,
enjoying it is supporting him. I'm not giving him money. I'm not going to his concert, but I'm at a party or it's on the radio or I have it on my iTunes playlist.
Think of the acceptance in the room of him as an artist at that moment. Like when you start dancing and then other people start dancing, there's sort of there's a wave people will ride but they'll say, like, this is R. Kelly. It's, you know, he did some bad stuff, but this song rules. It's fine. I think that the culture that generates in the room, and like that, and by the way, this is what's been going on with R. Kelly for so long that's finally ending.
And that culture of acceptance leaves the room. Then it goes back out into the culture.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. A little bit, yeah.
But say the song never gets played ever again. Like, just in a hypothetical world, that happens. Does R. Kelly does that affect him at all?
You mean financially?
Absolutely, I mean, he's set no matter what. I think it might be your point.
Right, that's kind of what I'm getting
at. That's true, but I think it would affect him financially, absolutely, if the song... I mean, he stands to benefit from the song for the rest of his life.
Did you think that Chance the Rapper's honesty was stupid or brave or coarse? What did you think about Chance the Rapper saying that the reason a lot of us didn't believe the women was because a lot of us don't believe these black women? And since there was no conviction, we dismissed them. It's a voice that is regularly dismissed in the culture, that of the African-American women. And Chance said, that's what I did. And boy, did he get punished for that. Again, Griff, I'm speaking a little out of school here because I just don't know these players that well. But I thought, yeah, I believe that is in the culture. And for Chance to at least own that or talk about that, I didn't know that he needed to be punished for it.
It's all in the mix right now. It is good that he owned up to it, though. I'll say that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think what he expressed is true. Yeah.
It's 10:20. This is WGN, John Williams. So those are some of the stories in the news. The big story this week, of course, was the government shutdown, which is now record-breaking, right? America needed a good story, and the Jamie Kloss story was, here's how bad it is. That's a good story. But who thought that after almost 3 months that 13-year-old girl was going to be found? She escapes her captor. I'm not exactly sure how. It wasn't known yesterday. But somehow or another, she got out. She runs out into the street. A woman walking her dog sees her. She says, I've been kidnapped. They run into a neighbor's door, knock on it. The woman opens it up, and she says, oh, my God, it's Jamie Kloss. They call 911, and the cops roll. They found that guy driving around town looking for her, and her description of his vehicle matched, and now he's charged with the killing of her parents and her kidnapping. There's a picture of her from People magazine. Somehow or another, they got it or had the exclusive rights to it. But there she is with her aunt and her dog. She always wanted a dog. She will not have her nuclear family anymore. But they said that her mother or her aunt was like a mother to her. Her aunt did daycare, and she was very, very close to her. So her cousins and her aunt will now be her new family. And I don't know what kind of therapist they have in northern Wisconsin, but I just wish nothing but the best for this young lady and hope that she's able to move forward and have a happy and productive life. That had to be so traumatic, and that she was finally able to escape is remarkable. And that was a hooray moment for a lot of us today. You know, it was a weird moment this week was the introduction of the TV show Trackdown. I'll take a break here, and let's get through as much of it as we can, Griffin. We've gone long, but there was a TV show called Trackdown from the late 1950s and early 1960s. It ran a few seasons, and the clip you've heard isn't half of it in a minute. From 1957 to 1959, CBS TV aired a series called Trackdown, starring Robert Culp as a Texas Ranger. In early episodes, the stories focused on Culp's character going to different Texas towns in pursuit of wanted fugitives. Season 1, Episode 30, 1958, titled The End of the World. A snake oil salesman has come to town.
Trackdown. I bring you a message. A message of great importance. I also bring you the means with which to save yourselves.
Save us from what?
From the end of the world, friend. Without my help and knowledge, every one of you will be dead.
So he's warned the town that the end of the world is coming. But one doubting cowboy in the crowd comes upon this new guy and the sheriff, who are sitting in a local tavern.
Your name is Trump? All right, Sheriff, how long are you going to put up with this?
What do you mean?
How long are you going to let this con man walk around town?
Be careful, son, I can sue you.
Well, stealing is stealing, whether you do it with a gun or a mouthful of mealy words.
I don't intend to sit here and be insulted, Sheriff. If your people don't want my help, I can go elsewhere.
Wait a minute, Mr. Trump, you don't talk for the rest of us.
So the charmer is named Trump, but our hero can't get the sheriff to stop him. There's no proof of any crime, the sheriff says. You will not hear the words no collusion in this scene, but I'll forgive you if you imagine them.
Since the sheriff wouldn't stop Trump, Hobie had to find somebody who would.
Are you here about Trump?
Yes, sir. What are you going to do about him?
What do you want me to do?
Stop him.
From what?
From taking a town.
Can you prove that that's what he has in mind?
Well, it's obvious.
But can you prove it? In order to arrest him, the sheriff has to have a charge. And Trump hasn't given him a thing to go on.
Well, there's got to be some way to stop him.
Well, if there is, I don't know it. It's a funny thing.
Sir?
When we were kids, we were all afraid of the dark. And we grew up, and we weren't afraid anymore. But it's funny how a big lie can make us all kids again.
That night, Trump sells his plan to save the worried townsfolk, and our hero calls him out.
The people were ready to believe, and waiting for them was the high priest of fraud.
I am the only one. Trust me. I can build a wall around your homes that nothing will penetrate.
What do we do? How do we save ourselves?
You ask, how do you build that wall? You ask, and I'm here to tell you.
You're a liar, Trump.
That's the soundbite that's going around. Trust me, we're going to build a wall. You're a liar, Trump. After selling them on the idea of building a wall, Trump tries to later sneak out of town, but the law catches up with him.
You're under arrest, Trump.
What charge?
Well, you write it any way you like. Fraud, I think a jury will find it's stealing.
I just wanted the sheriff there to go, colluding with the Russians! But that would have been a non sequitur. That would have been really remarkable if they'd predicted that. I'll bet you that Trackdown, which you can watch in its entirety on YouTube, is going to get a lot of hits these days. Not for that alone, but now that I've introduced, I want to find out more about how Robert Culp, the Texas Ranger, tracks down wanted fugitives. All right, we'll pause here. WGN Radio News comes your way next. Thank you, Don. Boy, speaking of stories that matter, Chicago is still reeling a week later from what happened last weekend in the Bears-Eagles game and the missed field goal. Kevin Williams has an online piece at the Chicago Tribune website today, and the first sentence of his article, his column is, what do you do? Let's say you're an accountant or an attorney. Are you one of the 32 best in the country? It's simple math. There are 32 NFL teams. That means Cody Parkey, is one of the best 32 in the country. He is better at his job than you are at yours. So there's that.
That got a lot of my friends in my group text riled up.
I'm not mad at Cody Parkey. I feel bad for Cody Parkey, but it's okay to be mad about the outcome. He was on the Today Show this week. We'll play some of the audio or at least talk about it in the 11 o'clock hour. But a lot of folks were mad at that interview, and I was one of them. And it's like, Cody, what are you thinking? You need to come on WGN Radio. You need to talk to Roe or John or Bill or Wendy or one of us. Joe, we've got some sports people hanging around here. He should be on a Chicago radio station, not on a couch in New York talking to Hoda Kotb, for crying out loud.
After he hit the goalpost against Detroit earlier in the year, one of the other sports reporters working in another shop, this was at the Blackhawks game, had a really good idea. He said, why doesn't Cody Parkey hang out around the L, around the train station,
nice,
and just shake hands with with the common Chicago folk and say, hey, how's it going? I'm Cody Parkey. Hey, I had a rough game. You know, I really appreciate your support for the Bears. Things like that, just
like he's running for mayor.
Yeah, something like that.
But imagine what the video would look like. And then somebody's taking some video. And imagine how, I don't know, this sounds contrived, so maybe it's not genuinely viral, but people would be hugging him and doing selfies with him and patting him on the back. And it would be Chicagoans, you're right, regular Joes getting on a train.
Right. And I mean, how
Or they would push him in front of an oncoming train. It would be one of the two.
Well, I was just going to say, all the keyboard warriors that there are these days, you know, when you see someone face to face, you're not going to be as tough as you are on the internet. So all these fans that are, you know, speaking terribly to this guy's life and his family and his career, you know, no one's going to do that face-to-face. And then that just kind of, you know, puts a little humane aspect of the whole thing.
Who is the company that did the field goal kick promotion? Is it Lagunitas?
Goose Island.
Goose Island. That's the deal they should have done. They should have had him buying guys beers and gals beers and
bars.
Yeah,
that's a good point.
You walk into some pub, hey, it's Cody Parkey. Let me get you a Goose Island. And then talk about it, you know? And then the music swells and it fades as they're having a good time, letting bygones. I want to vote for that guy for mayor.
I think that'd be a better route. That would have rubbed people the right way a lot more.
That would have rubbed us the right way.
Than what happened yesterday.
The Bulls versus Golden State last night, I just need to mention this, was I watched the game last night, and they could have, if they wanted to, beaten the Bulls by 100 points. That's kind of not an exaggeration. The Bulls set a record last night for the biggest deficit after the first quarter. They were down 26 points at the end of the first quarter. That's hard to do.
I think it was 9-2 out of the first minute. Or a little over a minute.
Klay Thompson made 3 3-pointers in the first 70 seconds
there it is.
Of last night's game. Now, he's the guy that set the NBA record for 3-pointers the last time they met.
14 3-pointers, yep.
The final in this one was 146-109, and it could have been 146-65 if they wanted, right? Because the some of their wives were playing. they went 4-on-5 for a while. In the last 10 minutes of the game, Golden State shot a soccer ball.
Everyone was dribbling with their non-dominant hand for a little bit.
They did the Bird Box thing at the very end, and they played blindfolded. It was unbelievable. And my takeaway from the game last night, and maybe this will be some consolation to the Chicago Bulls, last night's game was not just about how bad the Bulls are this year. It was really about how good Golden State is. Golden State is golden. They just make it look so good, so effortless. They are so talented. And, you know, the guys that come off the bench, we would be happy to have. In fact, one of the guys that came off the bench, just to remind the world that it's almost two different leagues, at the end of the first quarter or sometime, he made a half-court-plus shot. You know, the clock's running down. I think it was the end of the first quarter. I think that's how they got their 43rd point.
I think you're right, too. I couldn't watch the game.
And he just went, oh, I'll just heave it. Swish. Whoa!
Hey, look at that. Look at what happened.
Steph Curry goes, I've done that. I could do that.
They just have the ability to just turn it on whatever they want. And that's why they've won 3 out of the last 4
it's
NBA
why
championships.
You know, I don't even know if it's good for the NBA. Maybe it is. Maybe it's good to have a team that good. That many assembled stars just dancing in unison, but when the Bulls come out there, they didn't even look like they could dribble the ball. They were in awe of the Golden State Warriors last night. The final score was 146-109. It was not that close. By the way, just before the news, we played this clip from the 1958 TV series Trackdown.
The people were ready to believe, and waiting for them was the High Priest of Fraud.
I am the only one. Trust me. I can build a wall around your homes that nothing will penetrate.
What do we do? How do we save ourselves?
You ask, how do you build that wall? You ask, and I'm here to tell you.
You're a liar, Trump.
You're a liar, Trump. That's the soundbite that's going around the world. That is not the first show, though, to predict that Donald Trump would be president. Right, Griff?
Yeah, that's true.
But that is just, I'm going to watch Trackdown because I love how those old Westerns, old TV shows were so dramatic, so damn macho, you know?
They didn't exactly predict, it's eerie in its similarity. However, at no point in Trackdown did they predict that Donald Trump would become president.
You may be president of the United States after the turn of the 21st century.
They didn't know who Donald Trump was. But I think you're alluding to The Simpsons, who came a little closer.
Okay, let's hear that.
As you know, we've inherited quite a budget crunch from President Trump. How bad is it, Secretary Van Houten?
We're broke.
The country is broke.
Oh, no.
That was in 2000.
So we knew of a Donald Trump then.
And he had even talked about running for president. I was reading an interview with one of the writers at the time that episode came out. The interview was conducted this year when this clip started resurfacing. And he was like, he had said that he might run for president. So it was kind of in the air a tiny bit. And with The Simpsons, they've made a lot of these kinds of predictions that now go viral, of things that have now happened long before they did actually happen. And I just think they make jokes about everything, and that the show has been on forever. So when just you have such a high volume of jokes, you're bound to land on, you know, some things that have happened. But it is pretty weird.
Sure, but if you throw 100 things against the wall, a couple of them are going to stick.
Seems like it.
You got 98 Simpson predictions, and they didn't happen. There's probably one about Bernie or Hillary being president.
Right? Yeah, nobody
too.
Nobody trots those out.
Hey, speaking of trotting something out, I want to talk to my friend Sue Kelly about our trip that's coming up in January. In January, it's a nice time to think about our trip that's coming up this summer. We're going to go to Paris for a couple of nights, and then we're going to spend about 6 nights going up and down the River Seine to Normandy on the 75th anniversary of D-Day. We won't be there on the day of the landing, but isn't it interesting, 75 years later, can you imagine the gravity, the moment that you'll feel when you go to Utah or Omaha or some of those beaches, and how lovely the trip will be up going back and forth, to say nothing of a couple of nights in Paris. This is an all-inclusive trip. And Sue just took the trip, I think, was it in October? She sort of scouted the route for us. And she came back with some very interesting observations. I want you to hear one or two of them in a minute. By the way, if you are a podcast listener, I want to recommend The Mincing Rascals. We'll broadcast part of the podcast after the 11 o'clock WGN Radio News. But it was judged by a committee that judges podcasts and journalism in Chicago as the best podcast this year. In fact, we're submitting our application for next year, for this coming year, in about a week. I got to finish that now that I think about it. But I'm really glad that Eric Zorn from the Chicago Tribune, Scott Stantis, our Patty Vasquez, Justin Kaufman from The Download and from the WGN Radio Morning Show, Steve Bertrand, who, of course, does the Noontime Business Hour here and also does news on my show, and I have been recognized as putting out one of the best podcasts of the year, the best one in the city of Chicago. How do you get it? Wherever you listen to podcasts. They're free. We also post it at WGNradio.com. And if you follow me on social media, I'm WGN King John. The podcast is always on my Facebook page, and there's a link to it there, plus a snappy video that goes with each episode. So, The Mincing Rascals. If you're doing any traveling, I suspect you might enjoy our company for about a half hour. If you're doing any traveling in about a half an hour, we'll talk to a meteorologist from the National Weather Service. If you're going south, you're going to run into it worse than you are getting it in Chicago. Where are you going this weekend? We'll get you some travel weather in about 30 minutes. Speaking of traveling, Sue Kelly is on line 6. Hi, Sue. This is John. How are you?
Hi, John. How are you? I'm great. I'm glad I'm not traveling south right now, though. That's not going to be good.
Get to Peoria, it's kind of tough. And if you go further south, St. Louis, it's one of the biggest snows they've had in years. So it's getting
crazy.
White, but it could be worse. You are you put together a trip for Brenda and me and WGN Radio listeners to Paris, up and down the Seine to Normandy. We are leaving at the end of July of this year, right?
That's right. There will be no snow. I can guarantee you that. It will be beautiful weather. We are just so excited about this trip, John. You know, as you mentioned earlier, it's the 75th anniversary of D-Day. And, you know, we're going to be there in that 75th year. And it's just a really a marvelous trip for those that want to really enjoy all of the history that goes around, that goes with the beaches and the cemetery, and there's just so much to see. And then we can balance that with, it's France and it's Paris and the culture and the art. And it's a great trip because it really provides, you know, kind of a great balance for those that are looking for that.
Well, you did the trip in the fall. Did you go to Monet's garden? Did you go to Monet?
Oh, we did. It was, our jaws dropped because you just come through. And even in October when we were there, I didn't expect the gardens to still be in bloom. And it's just the most peaceful place you've ever seen. The gardens are amazing. But one thing I didn't realize is we will go through Monet's home. And his home is surrounded by the gardens, and then the pond and the bridge that everyone thinks about with the lily pads, that's actually in a little bit different area. But we go through his home, and we're upstairs in his bedroom looking out over his gorgeous gardens, and that was the inspiration for so much of what he painted. And there we are. We're looking at the same thing that he was inspired by.
Makes you want to run home and paint.
it did. Yeah. It did. I'll get my color by number, or, yeah, you know, out tomorrow. But it was just such a special place, and it was the whole, the town, the gardens, his home. It was quintessential.
Well, is that the town that you were telling me about? You and I spoke about this just in a phone conversation, mm-hmm, recently. You were describing to me, I thought, a little town that you discovered or that is on the itinerary that was really fun to visit. Is that the same place?
Oh, that's it. Even, I thought we were just going to be out at a little home, and it's not. It's the home and the gardens are part of this little town, Giverny, and it's, after you come through, you have some time, and there's a little museum, and there's these little shops, and we were a little hot, so we stopped and had the most delicious lemon sorbet I've ever tasted in my whole life. And we could walk through all these little art galleries and shops, and it it's so beautiful, and there's flowers everywhere, and it's quaint. It was so much more than I could have expected, and I can't wait to share it with everyone.
Yeah,
I can't wait to tell you which was the best gelato, or which was the best sorbet.
Sorbet. You know, the boat that we're on, it's one of those river boats, which, yeah, this is what surprised me the last time we did one of these, is how much room there is in there, how nice the restaurant is. There's a couple of dining options and bar areas, yeah, and seating areas, and then the rooms are very nice. It's not a cruise ship. It's, what, 150 people?
We're 140 guests, 140 very lucky guests. And it's true, even though the ship is very small, there's only 140 of us. So, you know, when we gather in that, I call it the living room area for cocktails before dinner, the dining room, there's, you know, no one's on top of each other, and, yeah, and it's such a fun place to be. And then if you recall, there's that wonderful alternative dining room that will make sure that everyone that wants to gets a chance to dine in there, and it's all included. You know, your cocktails before dinner, that alternative dining room, all these excursions, it's all included, and it's just, you know, there's plenty of room when we are cruising. The scenery was beautiful, and it's so fun to be up on deck, and there's a little hot tub up there if you want to take a dip. I remember you were out playing chess up on deck. There's a gigantic chessboard up there.
That was very fun. And you know what surprised me, too, was because you think smaller ship, I mean, it's 140 as opposed to 4,000 on some of those ocean liners. And we've been on trips, yeah, with you where the boat will carry 500 or 800 passengers. But this is my point.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the wine, the last time we were on one of these Ama River boats, was the best wine I've ever had. And the food was fantastic. There's no downgrade on the food and beverage, and it's all included.
Oh,
so
no, there's not.
That's delightful.
And, you know, yes, all the wine, you know, especially what they do on Ama is all of that wine is local. So you are getting French wines. You are drinking the local wines, which there, I don't think there is a bad local wine. So you are drinking the best of what is right in your area.
Yeah.
The food is excellent. Remember, we have that one night, that's the Chien de Rotisserie's dinner, which is just an over-the-top experience, and it's just, you know, it's just such a nice way to travel. It's a comfortable way, it's a relaxing way without the crowds, you know, no one's, yeah, rushing to,
well, this
get
is what
someplace.
I like about it too, speaking of relaxing,
yeah,
we got to wrap this up, but what is relaxing to me in January in Chicago is having that carrot, is thinking, you know what, I'll get,
yes,
I'm almost,
yes,
through January now, July will be here before I know it, and I will be on that ship with John Williams, Brenda, and a bunch of WGN listeners, just having the time of my life, and once,
absolutely,
you're on the ship, you do not have a care or an expense in the world, because it's all inclusive.
Yeah.
The website is kellycruises.com, right?
It's kellycruises.com, and I will tell you, John, the group of travelers, it is the nicest group.
Yeah,
everyone is so friendly.
We really do.
It is. It's just fun. It's really fun.
All right.
And
time's up.
I'll tell you.
Time's up.
We're looking forward to it.
Okay. So here's the phone number, 630-990-1111, 630-990-1111, or kellycruises.com. Trump.com. Call that number Monday or visit that website right now. You'll see my picture there and click away. And we have just a few slots left, so I suspect after this there won't be many or any. It's nice to talk to you, Sue. We'll see you soon.
You as well, too, John. Take care now.
Happy,
bye-bye.
Happy New Year in January. July's around the corner. Thank you, Don. It's 1112 on WGN. This is John Williams on social media. I'm WGN King John. That includes Facebook. And there we always post the Mincing Rascals podcast. Wherever you listen to podcasts, you can listen for the Mincing Rascals, judged the best podcast in the city of Chicago this year. And this Thursday, we dropped another one on you. We talked about a variety of things. In fact, I'll play for you in part here some of the gang's recommendations. We always close the podcast with something we're eating, drinking, listening to, watching, or reading. And there's usually some pretty good stuff there. We'll get to that in just a minute. But we started with part of the conversation after the president's Oval Office address to the country, where he was talking about the border wall and the government shutdown. And I was just noticing how interesting it was, the Fox News coverage after the president's address this week. Shep Smith and Chris Wallace were themselves fact-checking the president.
The government statistics show that there is less violent crime by the undocumented immigrant population than by the general population.
And this was even before, I mean, it was spontaneous. They were anticipating this. This was even before Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer squeezed into that podium.
Ugh. That was so uncomfortable.
More about that in a minute. But I was so I was so glad to see Shepard Smith call the president out on this. So that was just good for journalism. That was good for Fox viewers to see it. It was good for me to see them see it.
One thing, it seemed to me, and no one else, I haven't heard anyone else say this, so I could be wrong, but it looked to me like the president, who we're learning now, wasn't enthusiastic about the idea. He thought, he told the TV anchors earlier that he didn't think it was a great idea.
What, the giving the speech?
Giving the speech.
The Oval Office?
And it seemed to me, watching him read it, that he had only pre-read about the first third or two-thirds, because toward the end, he started to
wander.
Just kind of wander through it, the words. And the other thing is, it wasn't a well-written speech. I mean, it just wasn't. There was one line where he talked about someone who was abducted.
Raped, murdered, and beaten to death with a hammer by an illegal alien.
Well, that's his doubling.
Right, so it's doing the grim crimes.
Well,
right?
I understand that, but if you're beaten to death, you're also murdered.
Yeah, well,
you don't need both words. My point is, he didn't say that off the cuff. Someone wrote that speech.
Right, that's
somebody wrote the speech, but I think he inserts.
I understand that. I didn't feel like he did there, but maybe he did, yeah.
I thought it was a relatively well-written speech relative to how he might handle this spontaneously. The problem is, when you do, it doesn't sound like him.
It reminded me of when he made the apology after the audio was released. It had that same sort of tone to it. Like
legalese or PR spin to it. I mean, remember he talked about, he used the words heart and soul.
This is a humanitarian crisis, a crisis of the heart and a crisis of the soul.
That's not his stock and trade. It doesn't sound authentic coming out of his lips. You could watch his eyes going back and forth on the teleprompter. It wasn't his best delivery, but that's not his
not his venue at all.
No.
Chuck and Nancy, stop doing
it. So weird.
I must reopen the government. Thank you. Leader Schumer?
Thank you, Speaker Pelosi. My fellow Americans,
just stop.
Although, did you see that their ratings were better than his?
That
had to make him so mad.
That is fascinating,
what?
Isn't it?
Yeah.
They have ratings for that?
Yeah. I guess they broke it down by the minute, and more people tuned in to see Chuck and Nancy than Donald Trump. What does that say to you? What does that say?
Nothing.
Really?
People don't want to hear Trump.
They're more interested in what the Democrats say than because they've discounted what he has to say.
I think they turned on the TV to see if he was done yet, and Chuck and Nancy were on.
That could be. It was a short speech.
Either way. That had to make him crazy.
It was just weird to see the two of them cozy. You know, here's how personal it is. The Democrats don't need to do a response, and if they do, either of them would be fine. But since both of them want to be punching back because it's so personal that they both squeezed into your TV set, shared a podium, and then read their script.
And two podiums would have been fine.
That would have helped.
Yeah, and maybe too narrow. I mean, how do you not have someone just do the staging of that? How is this going to look?
Or no podiums and one microphone, then they could hand it back and forth. How would that look?
Sure.
I thought maybe they could be sitting and there'd be a fern in between them.
Sorry, I had to cancel a few times.
You know what, Zach? It's no problem. I mean, I have to say, when I heard that
like people actually watch this show, I was actually pretty surprised.
Nice.
These responses, and no matter who gives them, never go well. Whether it's Marco Rubio with the little, you know, the dry mouth thing, mm-hmm. or I think the Louisiana governor, Bobby Jindal, did one, I think, that didn't go so well. It's just not a good forum. It's just, so I think if I were running the show and I'm the Democrats or Republicans in the flip, I would say to the networks, we are going to make a representative available to you on set to talk and respond.
Have a conversation.
And do it that mm-hmm. way. Now, maybe the networks wouldn't have allowed that because they wanted to get back to regular programming during this sort of speech. Maybe this was their only option. But State of the Union, that stuff, those things don't ever work, I don't think.
You're right. You can remember all those times. Was it Jindal that came walking out like he was going to approach the podium like a presidential sort of address? They always stage it in a way that's
right.
awkward.
I know Joni Ernst did one, the Iowa senator.
Oh, remember when Kennedy did one and he was sweating?
Yeah.
That is our story. It began the day our founding fathers and mothers set sail for a new world.
His right. words yes. were great, and he seemed very likable. I think ultimately he survives that. He had flop sweat.
Another perfect example, right? Democrat example. It just doesn't. It's not a good. It doesn't.
Format.
That's Patty Vasquez and Steve Bertrand. We'll cut it there, but you can listen to it in its entirety. They talked more about the president's speech. They talked about Cody Parkey's missed field goal and more. But at the end, we always close with our recommendations, something that the gang thinks you would enjoy. We rolled into that out of my making a point about how good the stock market has been. This is track two, Griff. Go. Since Christmas Eve, the Dow is... Today, right now, I'm looking at the wall. We're 8 points up. We were almost 2,000 points higher today on the Dow than we were Christmas Eve. That's good news for America. That's good news for Donald Trump.
There you go. You've said it. Okay. And you're mainstream.
Your recommendations now?
Yes, I'm very excited. Thank you for finally getting to me. So
thank you for not leaving before the podcast is over.
I got to go. I used to love to watch Love Actually on Christmas Eve with the family, and the kids rebelled. So this year we watched Four Weddings and a Funeral. Love that movie too.
One of
right?
my favorites.
And then we noticed the parallels. They're written by the same guy.
Oh Lord, they're the same movie.
Richard Curtis.
No, it's.
I didn't
no.
know they were written by the same.
Isn't
and then
lovely.
My brother-in-law said you have to see this other Richard Curtis movie called About Time.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm writing that down.
I'd never heard of this movie. It was, I think, 2013, and Rachel McAdams stars in it. Bill Nighy, who's in Love Actually, and it's about. I don't want to say it's time travel, but it's about this family that can go back and sort of change things or revisit things. But it's really not that. It's just a really sweet story about family love. And man, I was bawling at the end of it. it's called About Time. And it really, I hope more people have seen it than I think.
Do you watch Outlander on TV?
I don't have that channel.
It has a time travel component. It's a
I know, but see, there we go.
Story.
I was talking to Bill Leff. He goes, oh, I like time travel. I'm like, I don't consider this about. I mean, they do travel in time, but it's not a time travel show.
Well, and the same is true for Outlander. You should watch that if you want to watch a romantic soap opera with your wife.
With a lot of skin in it, too.
Right? Yeah. Great. There's a great love scenes in that. or there's romance. There's
okay.
great romance.
Now I'm going to go because I got my recommendation.
Okay, nice, Seabird. By the way, Love Actually is like, what was the other one you just mentioned, Steve?
Four Weddings and a Funeral.
Four Weddings and a Funeral, because it's multiple stories with multiple characters, and
really,
you do see some of them.
No, you're really following Hugh Grant and his core group of friends, for the most part, and it's about his inability to, build a relationship. He's a serial monogamist. That's where I learned that phrase.
Love, isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Although, in the case of Love Actually, whole podcasts have been done. About,
really?
Is that a good movie or a bad movie?
And where do you land?
Well, I used to love it, and now... Every time I watch it, even though there were some of the storylines that I didn't like, now I'm watching it through the filter of the people that don't like it. And I'm starting to validate their views. So each time I watch it, I like it a little less mm-hmm. rather than get warmer and closer to it. White Christmas, every time I watch it, I love it more. Love Actually, I love it less.
I can't get over how skinny that woman is in White Christmas.
Oh, God, it's not healthy.
In fact, she
wasn't healthy.
Yeah, she teeny tiny little waist.
Yeah.
My recommendation is a book called Perfect Pain by Parham Parasteron. He was born in Iran, and his family fled when his father was almost assassinated. It was during the Islamic Wars, and his family's Baha'i, so they had to flee because they were not Islamic. And they came to the United States and struggled in many different ways. But Param was very successful, even in high school, with being popular, and but very early on started experimenting with drugs and drinking and became this really a hardcore partier, and really hit rock bottom, even though he was being very successful in his life. He was an entrepreneur, a successful business with his family, but woke up naked with broken glass all around him, his wife standing over him and just saying, "We're done. I can't live like this anymore." And through psychoanalysis, he has dug back into his past and unearthed some of the and dealt with a lot of his childhood trauma. And he was on last night and we were talking about self-destructive behavior, because growing up, I dealt with a lot of things in my childhood. And he was talking about how, you know, when you do things that are self-destructive, it's like your core strengths hitting up against this inability to deal with life anymore. You know, he was saying in this, like, our building has, you know, what, 30 floors? And, you know, you bring in a structural engineer and you go, "Hey, let's make sure we can do 30 floors." But for our own inner strength, maybe we hit 9 floors and we go, I don't have the rest of the structural integrity for this. And how do you find that?
So is the conversation about building your foundation so you can take on or manage more?
Well, his book is about his journey coming to this crossroads of trying to go to rehab, trying to go to AA, trying to all these different things, and ultimately having to build himself back up again. And why, you know, and he has a website called perfectpain.com, and there are videos, and he talks a lot about maybe, you know, and also mourning the things you'll never have, whether it's approval from your parents or, you know, people believing your side of the story. It's like, you know what? That may never happen. And so you have to learn how to deal with that.
That's our Patty Vasquez, and the book she's talking about is Perfect Pain. Steve Bertrand's recommendation was About Time. Producer Griffin reminds me, by the same guy that did Notting Hill. Griff says that About Time is a really good recommendation of a movie that maybe you haven't seen and probably should. Okay, that's high praise. It's 11:23. Hey, how about the forecast? We'll visit with a meteorologist from the National Weather Service to get you a little travel weather in a minute. Ben Dubelbeis is a meteorologist with the National Weather Service here in Chicago, and he joins us now. Hi, Ben. It's John. How are you?
Hi, John. Good. Thanks for having me.
I'm interested in people that are traveling today, Ben. If they're going to the south, say you're heading Peoria, St. Louis, if you're going in that direction, what am I going to run into?
Yeah, well, areas south of Chicago here have already had quite a bit of snow today. We've already seen reports of anywhere from 6 inches to a foot of snow across portions of central Illinois back towards St. Louis. And even as you get into Missouri there, we've seen some reports of over a foot of snow already.
Wow. But the temperatures have been good enough and are going to be good enough in our metro, right, that I like the chances of the salt and the traffic. Maybe roads aren't as bad as they might be.
Yeah, we're looking at temperatures in the low 30s here. I know the trucks have been out treating the roads here, so hopefully they're able to stay on top of it. Fortunately, here in Chicago, the snow is going to be fairly light in nature throughout most of the event. We might have a few bursts of some more moderate or briefly heavy snowfall, but it's going to be a fairly light snow event, so hopefully the plows will be able to keep up with it.
Yeah, I've seen some driving around already. You say event. Is the event just now starting at 11:30 in the morning, 11:28 in the morning?
Yeah, we've had some snow kind of steadily working into northern Illinois here over the past few hours. So we're probably going to see snow picking up here during the afternoon and should start to wind down this evening.
So what's your guess? O'Hare Airport, how much do you think they're going to get?
For the Chicago metro area, we're looking between anywhere between 1 and 4 inches of snow. The northern portions of the Chicago will probably be on the lower end of that spectrum, including O'Hare, so you might only see 1 or 2 inches at O'Hare. As you get south, closer to the I-80 corridor, we might start pushing 4 inches, and south of I-80, we're looking at a little more than 4 inches, 4 to 7 inches.
What if I'm going east or west? So is this storm going north and east? Is it going to be more problematic if I'm traveling to Indianapolis or, say, southwest Michigan, that band?
Yeah, basically anywhere south of here. We've got winter weather warnings that stretch from basically Cincinnati west to Indianapolis and all the way back to St. Louis here. So anywhere south of I-80 is probably going to experience the worst conditions. As you get a little further north, you'll probably see some lighter but not unimpactful snow.
Yeah. And this isn't, this isn't typical in that a lot of times it comes from the west and north. For instance, there's no lake effect on this, right?
No, we're not really looking at any lake effect for this particular snowstorm.
Yeah, let's go one other direction then. So I'm going to go to Des Moines. I'm heading I-80 and going west. Will I be okay going that way?
You're probably going to get some light snow on that I-80 corridor. But, yeah, certainly the further north you are, the lesser the amounts are. So there's a lot of winter weather advisories along the I-80 corridor as you head west across Iowa there. So some lesser snow amounts than what I talked about earlier that was occurring across central Illinois and Missouri. But certainly enough to cover the roads.
Yeah. One last thing, Ben, and for some people this is the most important question. You know, a few inches of snow and kind of warm. Is this good snowball, snowman weather?
Certainly when you get a little bit of wetness to the snow there, that'll help the snow pack a little better so you can make some snowballs and some snowmen.
Okay. Ben Dubelbeis is a meteorologist with the National Weather Service. I hope that helps. It helps me. Thanks for your time, Ben. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Take care.
And this is John Williams. It's 11:40. Saturdays at this time, we start this segment with producer Griff introducing us to what today, Griff?
This is the song called Because It's in the Music by Robin, the Swedish pop star.
That's a Swedish pop star?
That is a Swedish pop star.
I don't know what I thought of Swedish pop stars, but I didn't know that's what they sound like.
Yeah, if you saw her, you wouldn't be shocked of blonde hair. She's been around for like 20 years.
Wow.
She's just been killing the game. But
why are you playing that for us?
Because it's from her most recent album, Honey, that came out just a month or two ago, which did pop up on a lot of year-end lists. A lot of people loved that album.
Wow.
Yeah, she's a big deal. About 8 or 9 years ago, she made her biggest splash with a double album called Body Talk, which had the song Dancing on My Own.
Uh-huh.
And that was kind of a crossover, a huge hit, and a very beloved song.
What is the name of this artist we're listening to?
Robin, with
Robin.
A Y.
Yeah, okay, fine.
I
think you know where I'm going with this.
She's sort of a master of, like, the sad dance song, and that's kind of what Because It's in the Music is, too. Dancing on My Own is sort of a classic, like, people dance their faces off to that song, but it's also sort of depressing. And like that makes them want to dance even harder. She's kind of the queen of that kind of thing. And
I didn't know that was a thing.
You get more of that on this album, Honey, as well. And she's just I love her. So
well, in the words of Joe Brand, I just can't imagine the situation where I want to listen to that song. So I'm going.
I don't
to
understand that.
I'm going to give it a 49. 49. Joe Brand, go.
I love Dancing on My Own. I do.
There you go.
And once you started playing it, I recognize the voice, and I'm gonna go with a 65. I didn't love the song, but I do like her. I'm glad
to hear that. That's good enough for me.
Yeah, Clepton's gonna kill this thing.
That's kind of like a modern classic, wouldn't you say, Joe? Like people go crazy for that song.
Yeah, it's weird. I heard it for the first time though just a couple of years ago at a wedding, and then I started hearing some covers by it, but I still like the original the best. But you're absolutely right. People dance to it hard. And it's a song about how you're alone and looking at the person who you want to be dancing with.
Yeah.
And you'll have to find that song for me, Griff, because that just seems to be counterintuitive.
Well, I brought it up because that's really her sweet spot. Like, she has a lot of songs.
Yeah, if anyone were to recognize her, I believe it'd be that song.
It's that Body Talk song you guys are talking about?
Yeah, right.
Okay, yeah, I like the imagery of the sad dance. Like, I know I always try and, like, even if it's a fast-paced song, I always try and keep, like, a sad or borderline angry look on my face when I'm dancing. So
do you dance with mop handles, too? Do you kind of of just lean
ideally,
against the thing.
Yeah, if there's any kind of, sweeping device or some kind of anything.
You do a lot of prop work.
Yeah, yeah. People love it. Well, it's physical comedy. You're not going to talk to anybody in a club. You have to show them what you're doing, yeah. I'll give that, I didn't mind that too much. I'd give that like an 82. I could see myself sadly dancing to that.
Joe Brand, what should we vibe here? Score on a scale of 1 to 100?
I kind of want to know your guys' reactions to Cody Parkey going on Good Morning America. I want to know if this was like something his agent said, hey, you know, it's a really good idea to do this. I'm kind of with you, John. I do like Cody Parkey as a person. I don't mind him, I guess, as a person. But to do this, to kind of just open the wound, and nothing was really exposed. I feel like we didn't learn anything from his interview on Good Morning America. Now, granted, we're in Chicago, where all we're doing is talking about this guy and this field goal attempt that went off the goalpost and was apparently tipped. But I just feel like it was 5 minutes of him being, hey, I haven't looked at social media, I'm doing what I can to get past this, which is a good thing. But also, I don't understand this whole lauding for his existence, really.
Yeah, that was a lot better for Good Morning America than it was for Chicago, or for that matter, Cody Parkey, in my estimation. The idea of him going on, the product of that interview?
Yes, that's what I want.
23.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll give that one
I'm ticked.
Yeah, I'll give that one a 17.
I'm madder at him for doing the interview than I am for him missing the field.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah,
I agree.
Me too. It's just a bad move. If you're going to go out there, like, show me some dark circles under your eyes, or like, I want you to be like really disturbed on Good Morning America.
Well, you know what? I wanted them to ask better questions. I mean, okay, it's an exclusive. We were trying to get him. Everybody's trying to get Cody Parkey on. I couldn't even get to his agent, and then he's talking to Hoda Kotb. That was just making me crazy.
You've said Kotb twice. It is Kotb. I wasn't gonna. I thought it was just.
I thought I was saying it in a way that blended those consonants and nobody would notice.
On a time, well, on the first one, I was going to let it slide once, but you did it again.
Well, it's because I don't know how to say your last name.
I get your pronunciation of Hoda Kotb's last name.
Let's give a quick rate on John's mispronunciation.
You killed it with the first two letters, but then you lost me at the end.
I don't think anybody knows the last nine. It's KO, and then there's just a jumble.
It is not that hard.
Like, you're talking about the new Blackhawks defenseman, right?
Cuckoo.
Griff, your thoughts on the interview?
I haven't seen the interview. So I can't say. But here's something that just keeps coming into my mind, and I'm sure everything that there is to be said about this has already been said.
Right.
Except, so I don't, but I haven't been listening to this conversation that closely.
Fair enough.
Does this field goal attempt and miss remind you at all of that scene in Uncle Buck? When they're bowling, and the little girl rolls the ball so slowly that it hits the front of the pins but doesn't knock any over, and Uncle Buck says,
"You might be the first one."
If the object of the game if the object of the game was to come as close as you possibly could to knocking any pins over, and not doing it, you'd be the champion of the world. That's what that field goal reminded me of.
I haven't heard that observation, Griff. You get to own that one. Congratulations.
That was my in lieu of watching the interview, because it's too painful. I honestly feel terrible for him.
Yeah,
and
we
so
all do. We all do.
I'm sure the interview was misjudged, but I feel bad for the guy. So,
I mean,
100.
Wow, what a turn that
out of the park.
I understand feeling bad for the backlashing he's been getting over the past week. Nobody deserves that. Nobody deserves all this, you know, death threats and anything far and in between that. But to do that, to go on Good Morning America and just kind of talk about yourself, I just don't see the reasoning for that.
Yeah. Well, towards the end of the interview, his wife said she's super proud of him. And then Hoda, whatever that lady's name is, she called him hun. She says, okay, honey, thanks for coming on. It was such a pat. It was such a pat.
So cheesy.
Don, did you rate the interview?
Yeah, I'll give that a 17.
17.
I thought that was just a bad choice.
Here's my question for the committee. 1 to 100, what do you make of Gwyneth Paltrow's idea of bringing her ex-husband on her honeymoon with her new husband?
Whoa.
How about them apples? How cool is that?
I did not hear that.
She revealed that she enjoyed a beach getaway over the holidays with her new husband, Brad Falchuk. He's the guy that did Glee, but they brought Chris Martin along on the honeymoon. So it was the two guys and all of the kids and Gwyneth.
Well, all right, so the kids were there, too.
That, I think, is the discriminating factor.
Yeah, that's what I was going to... I mean, if there were no kids, I mean, that is...
Bizarre.
What are you talking about?
Yeah.
And that's the headline, though. But then you say, yeah, but the kids came along.
And that would make me think that's why Chris Martin would go. I mean, Chris Martin can go on his own trip, I'm assuming. So why would you want to do it while you, when you're...
Right, he doesn't come up to Gwen and think, well, look, I'm a little short this month.
Please, can I come with you and your new husband?
Are you going on a honeymoon? What do you guys say? Is that all inclusive?
Yeah.
Is that the buffet?
I'll cook.
Yeah, I'll cook for you guys. I'll clean the room up afterward.
What
yeah.
do you need?
I have no. It's good. Like, the family is sticking together.
Yeah.
It's a nice arrangement. It's a product of their. They didn't get divorced. They consciously uncoupled.
Right. It's so Gwyneth is the problem.
This is what happens when you consciously uncouple. You stay. It actually does remind me, though, there was a great profile of Gwyneth Paltrow in the New York Times last year. I don't know if you remember. It was kind of a big deal. There's this huge profile of her, and it was fascinating and really funny by this writer, Taffy Brodesser Ackner. I highly recommend going back and finding that from
last
year.
She the lady who did the Glitter article, too?
No.
That's somebody else.
That was somebody else. But when she was in their house talking to Gwyneth Paltrow, like, the kids are off making beautiful music in their rooms that they can hear coming in, and Chris Martin's just kind of floating around, and they're all at peace somehow, and she just looks around and is like, how is this possible? I don't understand. But
are they all walking on little white clouds under their feet?
It doesn't hurt when you have all the money in the world. I'll say, like, I think it's a little easier to hang and be cool with everybody.
Yeah, but that's the thing. That's my only trouble with the whole Gwyneth scene, is that she's selling these really expensive, marginally effective, holistic health aids, or whatever her brand is.
Goop.
And I know that, but I mean, I'm not sure any of that's really legit. It's just making her a lot of money.
Well, you should, look into this. They dive into all that stuff. It's
all
interesting.
Right. So 1 to 100, the idea of the honeymoon with the kids and the ex, I'm giving it a 90, a solid 90
hey,
for the
if
whole
you can
game.
Do it, God bless, 100.
Yeah. 100. Joe, go.
Yeah, I'm going to peel back the curtain a little bit and shed a light on Joe Brand's home life. I'm watching The OC now. I'm watching that on Hulu, and everybody's hanging out with everyone's ex. So once you brought it up at first, I was like, oh, it's not that big of a deal. But then thinking about it, like, how I don't see how the conversation gets brought up, the idea gets brought up, but if they're able to make it work, yeah, I'll give it a high 80s. We'll go 88.
You want to chime in on this in the newsroom, sir?
Yeah, I'll give it, I was going to say 87 just because, for the kids. I'll say 87 for the kids. Yeah.
Right, well, that's all very nice for them. By the way,
87 for the kids.
Great job, hon.
Don, do you have something for us to 1 to 100 to vote on?
Sure. I guess I would say just the news this week of the broadcasts from deep space, the fast repeating radio bursts that NASA found.
Yes.
The question of whether it's, you know, obviously evidence of extraterrestrial life out there, and the kind of debate that launched. What do you guys think?
I love that story. It's the second time this has happened, mm-hmm. and they say it's probably not, you know, an AM radio station on Planet Quang, but just the fact that we have the ability to detect it, and it gives you some sort of fun promise or hope. I'm 100 on that. Yeah. I'm 97 on that.
How disappointed would you be if you heard these radio bursts and they were talking about that missed kick?
Or the interview broadcast.
Right.
Good Morning America.
And Cody broadcast. Is doing an interview on Planet Quang.
and he gets called Hun. It's a pattern.
How can you
there.
Only sadly dance to Robin? How can that happen?
All right, so I'm giving that a 97. Griff, how jazzed are you by that revelation this week?
Yeah.
Okay.
100.
Joe, you're on board, though, right? You love that story.
Yeah, call up Amy Adams and get us to talking with the aliens. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. And Don, you're on board, right?
Yep, that's a 100 for me, too.
Go science, go humanity. It's 11:52. This is WGN. Brett, thank you. Don, thank you. Joe, thank you. Griffin Filipich, our producer, thank you. Amy Guth is in the studio. She'll work with some of those people, plus Bob Kessler's in the newsroom. What have you got coming up?
Well, we are going to talk about the legacy of Sears in Chicago. That's been a brand that's been in the news quite a bit over the last couple of years. So we're going to take a look at what that legacy is. And I suspect it's one of those things like, you know, how we get attached to like saying Comiskey, that even when it changes hands, we don't want to change what we're saying. And Sears Tower, even though it changed to Willis, we still say Sears Tower.
I do.
Yeah, I do too.
I still say Hancock, and I think I always will.
Oh,
technically,
same.
It's not the Hancock anymore.
I know. And I think that one's kind of lesser known. But people, you know, you get attached to saying something, and part of it's habit.
Well, does Sears have a chance chance of making it? I mean, are they going to rebound?
It's not looking good, but we're going to talk with Robert Chanik from the Chicago Tribune about that. I think it is kind of grim for Sears at this point, but we shall see how it's looking. We're also going to take a look at some of, this is a really interesting story from the New York Times about some of the ways that Coca-Cola has kind of buddied up to the Chinese government. And it's even going so far as to open an office in the government's health ministry, which we don't think about Coca-Cola and health very much, but there we go. So we're going to take a look at those stories and more.
Amy Guth, have a really good show.
Thanks so much.